Want to have your own business but don't want to start from scratch? Franchising might be the answer you're looking for. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show, the show that brings you thought leaders in business, franchising, and high-performance personal development. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Own a business without the pain and financial losses that come with creating it. Find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Learn how franchising can help you get there. Listen up and get ready for another episode of The Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to The Level Up Show with Nick Lopez. Today, I am absolutely humbled to have today's guest on the show. His name is Gary De Jesus. Gary is a longtime friend and actually attended Harvard, where he played football. He also went to NYU Stern, where he received his MBA. Gary is a chief marketing officer, is the brand architect behind many national brands you probably know and have fallen in love with. Gary also worked at Procter & Gamble for almost 20 years, right there in his backyard in Cincinnati. Gary, welcome to the show.
Nick, thank you very much. Great seeing you again. It's been a little bit, but always enjoy our conversations.
Yeah. But, oh my gosh, everything that you've done in terms of brand development with Lime is still alive and thriving. So I'm excited to dive in today and help viewers level up through your knowledge as a marketing and brand expert. This is a show where we want to help people level up by speaking to thought leaders in business, franchising, and high performance development. All of those things are right up your alley, Gary. So you're somebody with a whole breadth of experience. So let's dive in. Let's talk about that exactly, your experience and how you've gotten to where you are today. If you wouldn't mind taking us through your journey and what put you in a position to help brands develop and level up.
I appreciate that, Nick. And I think it really comes down to, at the end of the day, getting to where passion meets focus, right? Those components of, and you can really start to focus in on certain things that you're really passionate about. You mentioned a little bit about my background, and to tighten it up just a little bit more, when I was at Harvard undergrad, I was a what was called OEB, Organismal Evolutionary Biology major. Right. So I focused in on a lot of ecosystems and behavioral biologies and so on. When I left Harvard and did a stint at Macy's in fashion retail for about 7 years. Then I got my master's at Procter. I started to work on a variety of different things. And Procter is very much a brand company, right? We are all about the brand. And the brand management system was developed to focus in and make sure that all elements of the brand come together. So it's not a marketing function or a finance function as much as it's a brand come together with all functions coming together to deliver against the brand. And that's where it really started. It came to that point of focus. Now, when we start talking about passion, I started to get into more and more the whole concept of understanding how the brain works, understanding neuropsychologies and cognitive sciences and anthropologies and so on. And I was actually able to work with a lot of folks, because Procter & Gamble believed in it as well, who had a lot of those backgrounds so that we can start to learn, how do you really influence the brain, right? How do you influence people to take special actions against a brand? We had a very rigid process of brand development. And when I left Procter, it really came down to continuing to focus on that passion. I'm a massive brand believer. I'm a brand geek. And at the end of the day, it really comes down to I'm constantly reading about new motivational techniques or new ways to influence the brain. I'm constantly reading about different aspects of the brand from other thought leaders or book writers and so on who go off and create. But it really comes down to the vast experience that I've had that has lent itself to going off and being able to reapply all the fundamental principles of creating a brand. And it's not just from a marketing standpoint. There are operational components that go into it, financial components that go into it, that you look at and you start to say, yes, this is the brand. This is what the brand stands for. This is how the brand is going to deliver the value that the end user is going to appreciate. This is how the brand is going to cohesively go to market against what the brand needs to stand for. all those elements, but a lot of it comes down from my passions, focusing in on cognitive science or applications of cognitive science against the brand, and the kind of the diligence and focus on the brand itself, rather than getting caught up on a lot of marketing bling, as I call it, shiny baubles. First, focus on what's the core of the brand. We can always add a shiny bubble later, but focus on the core of the brand.
Yeah, focus and passion, two very juxtaposition type statements there. I think it's hard to be passionate, but focused as well. I'm sure that's not easy, especially when this is such a creative process, developing a brand. There's so many different avenues, and I'm sure so many different wants. And you have the distinct assignment to work with founders and leadership team to do just that. Is it hard to get the team focused, or the individual that you're working with, is it hard to get them focused? Well, also, I'm sure they're full of passion. So how does that look, that creative process, in terms of the journey of your career and how you've gotten into the position that you're in now to be looked at as a thought leader in brand development? How has that journey for you been in terms of you leveling up to keep a leadership team focused and passionate in that creative process?
I will tell you that the biggest thing that I had to level up on was my ability to influence the audience in a way that was not manipulative, right? Because too many times we can go in there and we can say, hey, look at my background, right? Just trust me, we'll just make this happen. That doesn't work well. Right. So at the end of the day, you have to be able to work with audiences, particularly highly passionate founders. Founders are by far, at least the founders that I've come in contact with, highly passionate about their business. They have wonderful long-term vision about where they want their business to go. I think sometimes it's just getting them focused on those things that are going to be the core elements to take them to that longer-term journey, but also to open up beyond sometimes some of the details. What I've found is that many founders, what typically happens is that they have in their head a very specific path to an endpoint. But what they don't realize is that that path that they have may not necessarily be the best path to that endpoint. So I always start with getting people to understand what they really want from an endpoint standpoint. Let's bring it out. Then let's start talking about, okay, if this is the endpoint, and I'm not talking about the endpoint of PE and so on. I'm talking about what they really have from a long-term vision standpoint on the brand's ability to impact lives, right? So if this is the endpoint, all right, let's focus in from a standpoint of, great, now this is what you're saying. Now let's talk about the pieces that are very important in order to get there. And so I work very closely with founders to tease out of them, as opposed to me applying, but to tease out of them what they really want to happen. But then the other component of it is that working with founders to say, what truly separates you from others in your industry? And I think that's probably the most difficult component of it. Too many times, I think we see people go off and they always say that they're better than the competition, but we know that better is never better because everybody says that they're better. So therefore, if everybody says they're better, then nobody is better. And so they rely too many times on what they call, what I call points of superiority, or they'll communicate too many times points of parity, things that are common within the industry, but they don't focus early enough on building those things that completely are ownable. And I think from that standpoint, that's a key component of, in fact, I remember when you and I went through the exercise, that was a lot of fun to go through those ownable points that you've now applied to your business and you continue to apply to your business and leverage in the right ways to be able to look at it and say, yeah, my business is different. My business can do all these wonderful things. My business helps people fall back in love with their homes. And we do it this way in a very ownable way. But again, it really comes down to getting the founder to focus in on truly what they want to have happen, what the endpoint is, and then tease out how we can make those pieces to get there ownable.
Yeah, those points of superiority, yeah, that so many brands focus on, I'm better at this, better at that. And a lot of features and benefits, we'll get into the emotional piece that all of this builds around versus points of superiority, features and benefits, all very common, but not that next level of brand development. So a lot of what you do, Gary, is in a process called the reason to believe. And I was anticipating this process. A lot of folks that had worked directly with you had really edified this reason to believe. And I can tell you firsthand, as one of the founders that have had the privilege of working with you, on the other side, the reason to believe, that process is really exciting. And so I'm looking forward to diving into it and sharing it with the world, because it most certainly helped me level up my blind painting. So would you mind just sharing a little bit about the approach and what is this reason to believe?
So the approach that I take, and obviously, Nick, you've gone through it, is first and foremost, we want to make sure that we understand our strategic target and we understand heart and head, right? What's in their heart? What's in their head? What do they really want to do? It's not about a media target, right? It's really about getting to understand who they are. And once we get to understand who they are, and we do know who our target is and what they want, then we can start to look at why and what's the value that we're providing to them on the terms that they want, not the terms that we want, right? And there's five fundamental human values. We went through that whole piece. Then we talk about things like positioning and so on. But ultimately, we start to get to the point where we start to look at, based on everything that we've laid out, why should we believe, or why should somebody believe that this brand can go off and execute against this emotional and experiential benefit? And again, it does go back to emotional and experiential benefits. You mentioned it before on features and benefits. Too many times what we see is kind of like this laundry list of things that it can do. It slices, it dices, it julienne's fries. Right? That's kind of 1990s, 1980s, 1970s, 1960s type marketing. With in the 90s, you started to see more experience come through, and then emotional connections are really what's driving it now. But we build these reasons to believe. And what a reason to believe very simply is those components that allows the end user, that person who's hearing the message, say, oh yeah, that makes sense. Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I think they can do it because of that. That's a reason to believe. So we take a lot of that, and the reason to believe have to be differentiating, because otherwise everybody else can say the same thing and all we're doing is lending itself to the category. But we focus in on those reasons to believe. And there are three things that we typically do from a reason to believe standpoint. Either A, there's something that is completely proprietary. Right. And you have some proprietary elements in your business, which was fantastic. So that's one thing that creates a reason to believe. Right. This is something that only line painting can do. The second thing is what I will call a branding exercise, where we literally create a name for something or part of the process that gets trademarked and therefore is ownable. Right. So you have a special process, or in your case, you have the creators that go off and help to create this vision for folks. And that becomes an ownable proposition. So now you have something proprietary, something that is branded and ownable. And then the third thing is a mashup. A mashup is where you take multiple processes together or multiple aspects, mash them together. Kind of think of when Humvee came out and you took a military vehicle with an SUV to create the Humvee. That's a mashup. Right. So you take a mashup, you put a couple of things together and it sounds so unique. But the combination of the two, because they come together so well, even levels up the thinking or what the opportunity is from that brand is delivering. So we look at those three elements. And the first element's really difficult. Not many people have proprietary components to a more significant IP. Line painting had some strong IP, which was very important. The second one is not easy as far as creating a branded element, but it's very important. And we work to go do, because that branded reason to believe has to fit the brand, right? It has to fit that this brand is going to get people to fall in love with their homes again, right? As with the case with Lime. And the third component of the mashup, that's just a lot of going through in almost in tedium, all the processes, all the aspects, all better features, and start to look at, can we combine them in such a way that nobody else is saying it this way, and then eventually look to brand it as well. But those elements are very important to getting and separating the brand from its competitors, outside putting it so it differentiates itself within the category, but also lends credence to everything that the brand is saying from its brand promise standpoint. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Well, for you, it does, because obviously you went through it, but for others.
Yeah, absolutely. So why is it called The Reason to Believe?
So it ultimately comes down to, very simply, if you think about the number of marketing messages that an individual is going to receive, that number is massive, talking about thousands per day. We have a tendency that if it's not going to disrupt the brain, right, then we're going to ignore it. All the stimulus comes in. Nothing is getting me to stop. Now, in order to get the brain to stop, you actually have to be disruptive, right? The brain stops, says, oh, what's that? When its thought processes are disruptive. However, the biggest issue is either it disrupts and there's no believability to it, right? That's BS. Or it disrupts and people are going, oh, wow, that's actually kind of cool. That's different. So the reasons to believe with the messaging lend itself to say, for the brain to say, oh, that's cool. I believe it. That is credible. I'm now going to remember that. I'll give you a great example. One of my favorite examples is, I think everybody's familiar with the brand Dawn, right? Dawn dishwashing soap. Every once in a while, unfortunately, Dawn is used to go off and clean up oil spills, right? So there's actually a Dawn Ducks commercial, as it's called, where it goes and shares how it safely cleans up oil spills and you see them washing off ducks. And that is a very powerful, disruptive message that it is tough enough to be able to break through crude oil and clean up crude oil, but gentle enough on baby ducks. That's the reason to believe that this can cut through anything on your pots that you think that you can put on there. And don't worry about your hands. It's not going to tear them up. And so that's a powerful way of communicating with reasons to believe that this is now possible.
In that example, where is it being demonstrated beyond just features and benefits? Right? How could we highlight in that example from a brand standpoint, the messaging, where is it different than just features and benefits?
It comes through in actions as well, right? So in service brands, it's the engagement between the client and the service provider, right? In brick and mortar brands, it's a lot of it's the engagement as soon as you walk into the facility, right? All those things, the interactions all play a role in supporting the reasons to believe or helping drive those reasons to believe. So if somebody is claiming that they have the X level of customer service, right, whatever the branded component is and special aspect of that customer service, and it comes through in the actual service itself, and then it gets regurgitated via a review, now all of a sudden that's highly supportive of that. Now it's not just the brand saying, hey, look at me. It's now comes back from the customer saying, hey, this brand does this in the way that it claims that it does this. So all the actions and interactions that we have with our customers, all the first moment of truth, second moment of truth. So the first moment of truth is basically when you start to see what the brand is. That's the first moment of truth, right? The advertising, the packaging, all those things. If somebody comes up on a service brand, if their van or if their truck or whatever they use to provide the service doesn't look the part that it's going to deliver against that reason to believe or support that reason to believe, that's a first moment of truth. The second moment of truth is that engagement with the individual who's providing the service, right? And then that third moment of truth is the actual usage of the service. So each one of those moments of truth, each the reasons to believe have to be carried through so that it does get to the point where it is emphasized and re-emphasized and then reinforced by consumer feedback or end user feedback.
So multifaceted, you're carrying that reason to believe from the disruption at the beginning all the way to the customer experience. And I'm sure you're doing your best to capture and tease out that core reason to believe is, wow, so multifaceted, it's more than just features and benefits in order to truly level up with whatever your messaging, your marketing efforts from a brand standpoint. Very neat. So I'm curious, you know, you worked at Procter & Gamble for, was it 18 years, almost 20 years there. How did that time impact and influence your approach with how you develop brands today?
So it is about rigor. Procter & Gamble teaches a couple of things. Number one, it is about discipline to market. We had a tremendous amount of resources at our disposal. However, the most important one was us being very, very rigorous on what we focused in against and delivering with excellence that element of focus. So we go back to the word focus again. It really has us go off and say, this is the plan. These are the elements of the plan. These are the key elements that are going to deliver what we needed to deliver. And that's where we're going to focus. We didn't do a whole bunch of shiny bubble marketing and shiny bubble development, meaning if this worked, we focused in on this, right? We had very small testing budgets compared to, but this is what we planned against. And a lot of it comes down to what we call brand equity, what we want the brand to stand for in the heart and mind of our consumer base. And so everything we did focused in against that. All our package design focused in against delivering against that. All our communications, all our user experiences, everything. And so we were very focused in on that element. How do we drive our brand equity? How do we drive what we want to do? But we also have to do it in a way that's going to get people to want to engage. So brand engagement was very important as well. So we always measured things through our copy or marketing's ability to engage. And ultimately, is it delivering against the brand equity that we wanted to deliver against? Is it to focus in on the brand purpose the way we wanted to do? But again, it's high diligence, very, 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 very detail focused. And that's where I learned to be able to give back to smaller brands, and particularly founders first starting out, technically as a smaller brand, and kind of teaching them that you don't need to have the budget of a Procter & Gamble, as long as you have the diligence of a Procter & Gamble. And these are the key areas, and focus in on only those things that you know are going to be core to delivering against the brand. And by focus, there's a whole adage that says focus drives brilliance. And that's what we focus in on. But again, it comes down to the diligence of processes that I learned from Procter that I was able to apply to this working with founders on their brands.
So you said a word that, let's back up. You said brand equity, right?
Yeah.
Starts there. Let's give an example. Let's give an example of Lime. Do you remember Lime's brand equity?
Yeah, I'm staring right at it. At the end of the day, it's what do we want to stand for in the heart and mind of our end user base? And for our end user base, it was very simple. What we wanted to do is, because of Lime Painting, I fell back and I love my home again. That's simple. I love my home again. It goes back to the whole piece where you and I sat down. And as we started going through fundamental human values and so on, we started to realize that when somebody comes home and they have this home that they wanted to redo, right? And it's become stale in their mind, or there's a lot of things, or maybe they bought it and it's not really where they want it to be. And then all of a sudden, the job is done and they see it. And you see many individuals with tears in their eyes. And those are tears of joy, tears of happiness. And it's not about, oh, thank God it's done. Wow, this is my home. God, I love this home, right? And it's those tears of happiness because they fell in love with their home again. They see their vision come to life and they fell in love with their home again. So everything that Lime does is about getting folks to fall back in love with their home. Or maybe it's first time fall in love with their home, but still falling in love with the home. And so that's where we want the, that's what we want the brand to stand for. We want that brand to stand for falling in love with the home. Now, does that have to do with paint selection? You know, what does that have to do with a lot of things from a standpoint of features and benefits? Well, all those features and benefits have to deliver against that piece, right? Because our fundamental human value was about delivering or eliciting joy. This is a happy brand. It's going to deliver love. It's going to deliver joy. So now all of a sudden, every feature, every benefit, is it delivering against people falling back in love with their home again, right? If it's something that is ancillary, don't communicate, right? Just because it says something to the tune of our vans are clean. And I know we don't say that, but let's say, for example, we did. Does that help you fall in love with your home again? No. So therefore, that's not going to be part of the communication messaging that's outbound to every individual, right? Yes, they want to be able to see a variety of different things that Lime Painting can go off and do that helps to fix and help them fall in love with their home again, whether it be from faux painting to fixing different components and so on. But again, it all has to go back to falling in love with their home again.
So from Lyme's standpoint, from that disruptive moment to the end consumer experience, it's all about capitalizing and creating that experience beyond just, hey, we use good products and we work with artisans. But that experience is about helping that customer fall in love with their home again. And there's no better sales tool than a job site, right? So if you're in a neighborhood, and for us specifically high-end homes, and you see your neighbor getting their home transformed and you see that process play out, man, that is disrupting, right? That disrupts in the mind. So being able to capitalize on that and start to invoke those emotions of what you said, joy, right? Ultimately giving them that glimmer of, hey, what's possible with Lyme painting? It's more than just a paint job, but it's an experience of me falling in love with my home. Okay, I'm interested. That's beyond just, hey, they show up, they do a good job, they answer their phone. Those things are the expectation, and maybe even decades ago. But again, how are we at Lyme leveling up our brand messaging and our marketing approach? It really goes back to all facets of the business, right? Marketing bleeds over into, you can see how it's bleeding into the operations and so many different aspects of the business, but having a clear understanding of your business and the consumer expectation and experience all the way through their interaction with the business. Wow. Thanks, Gary. That is definitely taking an intro understanding of marketing and putting a lot of different elements on it that can really take a brand to the next level. And firsthand from my experience, it's been awesome applying it, seeing it play out over the past couple of years. It's really taken our brand to new heights and helped us level up. So I want to shift a little bit, change gears. You had right there in your backyard in Cincinnati, you had the privilege of working on a pretty neat project with FC Cincinnati. Would you share with us a little bit about how you, number one, were given that project and how it played out and how you helped them level up from a brand standpoint?
So yeah, that's definitely a shifting gears. And it was actually a lot of fun. That was a scenario, I'll tell you point blank, where we were building the plane as we were flying it. And I took FC Cincinnati through the process. And as a result, so many things came through from it. Number one, everything from the color palette of FC Cincinnati in its blue and orange, from the tonality of a lot of the way it went to market, from a lot of the pieces that were developed from a social standpoint and so on. But very simply, the current president CEO, Jeff Burden, Jeff and I are friends, and Jeff had knew my background. He and I actually worked together in a youth soccer program. At the time, I was the president, he was my vice president, and had this opportunity. He was working with the Bengals at the time. And so while he was doing that, he took this opportunity on and asked me to basically develop all the brand aspects of it. So it wasn't just the aspects of the brand itself, FC Cincinnati, but it was also developed a lot of the operational pieces, including the naming of a very special supporter section called the Bailey. And Bailey is basically where folks in the castle kept their armaments. Think of them as the secret weapons, and created this more castle motif and delivering from that component. It was a lot of fun. It was definitely one of those things where every aspect of brand development that I take brands through applied. And it really, for me, just kept on going with the idea that the brand process and brand development process can go across every industry, even sports, right? Sports franchise is still a franchise. At that time, I was also working on developing CycleBar. And CycleBar was the same process as FC Cincinnati. And in both cases, honestly, we were building the plane as we were flying it. And so it was a lot of fun, but it's with the brand development process that you can start to build all the elements, right? You know what size the wings need to be. You know what size the seats need to be inside the plane and all that because of all the aspects of the process that we went through. So it was very exciting to do a sports franchise. I had never done a sports franchise before. And so it was my first foray into that. And I realized it's just like any other franchise. It starts with solid fundamentals and brand and what the brand stands for.
Yeah, I would have not expected that you would have said your days at Procter & Gamble really shaped discipline. And seeing that carry through on that project, what a neat opportunity to have. Soccer's just coming up more and more, and that's an iconic brand in the soccer world. What was probably your favorite part of that project?
My favorite part of the project, wow. Once we developed the brand essence, brand fundamentals, we started to engage in all the social pieces and so on. We started teasing out a lot. So we had a lot of fun. For example, we would tease out on social. We would post something coming big in Cincinnati, and then we'd take it down, right? And so we'd put up a lot of things and then take them down. And people would be like, wait, wait, what's going on? We would go out and have people, just the extractable branding unit, the lion in this case, with the NFC Cincinnati logo, the EBU, we would take stencils and we would do chalk outlines of the stencils in a variety of different places, whether it be downtown or on campuses and so on, without the name at all, just the mark. And so there was a lot of teasing, but it came to the point when we actually did the launch, the media launch and so on. We had, on that one day alone, I think the number was 5 million impressions from that, including in the UK. So it was a very big launch, did really well. So I think that was my favorite part, leading up to that piece and getting a lot of that fun, little teasy stuff going to get to that launch of the brand.
Yeah, there's not a lot of franchises that can create so much fanfare, right, than sport. It's all time. So that would have been so much fun. What a unique opportunity, Gary. I mean, you did a great job. So we've talked so much about marketing and, need I say, branding.
you say that.
I did it. So just out of fun, I've slipped up around you a few times and said the word branding. Why is that word a no-no?
Well, it's not that it's a no-no, but for me, it's kind of a no-no, because at the end of the day, when somebody calls me a branding person, I was like, branding is what you do to a cow's ass to let everybody know you. It's that simple, right? Branding is how you place the brand, where you place the brand name and so on, and what does it look like in all those pieces. And in some cases, it could be a little bit what's behind it. But when we talk about brand development, it is building all those pieces that's behind the brand. So branding and marketing are aspects of brand development. Think of them as offshoots of and results of brand development. So what I like to focus in on is the very core that lends itself to putting your mark on a cow's ass or going with some whatever promotional or communicative marketing piece that there is. Right. So that's why I always cringe at the word branding, because I just literally, it was invented a long time ago, right? Put a mark on either a cow or a horse's behind, right? To let everybody know that you owned it. And people were strung up and hung, okay, because they stole somebody else's with their mark. And so, yeah, that's, it always reminds me of that.
So it's outdated. It's an outdated term.
Basically. In my mind, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, much like a lot of different marketing aspects, as we've learned today on the show, right? What do you think is a more appropriate term for branding? What is a new school term for branding?
Well, I don't know if it's a new school or whatever, but I think it's just more comprehensive when I talk about brand development. And I really talk about it more from a holistic brand development standpoint, where all the aspects come together, as we talked about throughout, saying, how do all the operational pieces lend itself to delivering against the end user? How do all the marketing communications deliver against the end user? Financially, does everything make sense to deliver against the end user? So it is about total brand development, holistic brand development, as we start to go off and do. And then what we really start to do is, it's always a continuous development piece. There's never a point in time where a brand is 100% done. At that point in time, then you can go back to the BCG matrix and call it a cash cow, right? Because once you get to cash cow status, that means you're really not enhancing the brand. You're just milking that brand for everything it's worth. But until that point in time, that takes a long time to get to cash cow status. You're constantly infusing elements in that brand to make sure that that brand is coming to life in the way that we want that brand to come to life. We're developing that brand, continuously developing a brand.
While being true to the brand equity, and as you mentioned, focus and discipline, right? While also having passion. But yeah, that process is ongoing. It isn't finite. Gary, I can truly see your passion, your focus, but I want to bring up the branding because I think it brings out some of your personality and maybe you can shed some light for some other leadership teams and founders and give them some light into what it's like to work with the Oracle as those around you that have come to know you refer to you as. You're definitely a thought leader in business, in franchising. You're definitely a high performer. And I really hope that those watching today leveled up in terms of their knowledge around brand development and take some things that they can apply and maybe they would be interested in working with you. I don't know if that's a possibility, but Gary, thanks for attending today and helping others level up. If anyone's interested in getting into contact with you, where can they find you?
So they can find me, just email me at Gary, so G-A-R-Y, at G-D-J, Gary De Jesus, brands, so gdjbrands.com.
Awesome. Well, Gary, thanks for helping us level up. If you have taken anything that's been helpful, please like this show, this video. Drop a comment. Let us hear what your thoughts are around Gary's journey and the reason to believe and brand development. All great things contribute to this conversation. And if you are interested in continuing to learn more, please subscribe to the Level Up Show. And as always, level up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit limepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.